Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now to our very special guest tonight on Open House, who's been on our If Only wish list for the past 2.5 years I've been doing this program. One starry summer night, after downing a six-pack of beer, this man began to wonder if there wasn't more to life than parties and chasing pretty girls. Pretty soon, life was never the same again. In fact, Max Licardo's life and remarkable ministry powerfully embodies the big picture thinking that's at the heart of his latest, and I wonder whether it's going to be one of his most important books. It's called You'll Get Through This. Max has written just on 100 books, sold around 80 million copies. He's been named America's Pastor by Christianity Today magazine. Reader's Digest labels him the best preacher in America. And I'm so honoured to say that Max Licardo joins us now from the United States on Open House. Max, welcome.
Oh, I am so honoured. Thank you. I'm just so flattered that you had had me on your program, and I appreciate very much this invitation.
And we're very honoured. Thank you so much for your time, Max. Can I take you back to that moment with the six-pack of beer and get you to background us with what led up to that moment?
I grew up in a small West Texas town, oil field, ranch, flat, cowboy country. You can probably tell by my accent that I was raised in Texas. I had good parents, really good parents, but the faith element of our life just didn't connect with me. I come from a family that has struggled with alcoholism. My aunts and uncles on both sides struggled with alcoholism. And at the age of 15, I began drinking, and I became a heavy drinker pretty quickly. By the age of 18, it was not uncommon for me to drink a six-pack an evening. And I began to realize that it took more and more beers for me to get the buzz that I wanted to have as one who wants to drink or get drunk. And it was a very poignant night. I was sitting with a friend. We were actually sitting in a parking lot, of all places, just a parking lot where we were drinking our beers, sitting in a pickup truck. And I turned to my friend James, and I said, James, you know what? There's got to be more to life than this. That was my sum total of life, was just drinking. And that was probably the first mature comment I'd made in about 2 years. And that's how everything got started.
What I'm led to think is something we'll explore in a moment about your latest book, You'll Get Through This. If, say, your mum and dad were to take a snapshot of you on that starry summer night, they'd be forgiven for crying out to God, "What are you doing with our son?"
What a good point. And I've used that story to talk to many parents whose children are passing through times of rebellion or ignorance or stupidity. And I said, you know, they're going to get through it. You just hang in there with them. Don't give up. It's going to take some time. It may not be overnight, but you sow seeds of goodness in their hearts and something good will happen.
So how was it that you took on a life and a faith that has eventually come to mean so much to millions of people around the world?
Well, I appreciate your kind words. I'm really just a preacher. That's all I am. I love the church where I serve. As soon after I became a Christian, when I was 20 years of age, I decided I wanted to be a missionary and moved to Brazil. My wife and I lived in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil for 5 years. There I fell in love with preaching and writing sermons. And I found a church in Texas because when my father died, I needed to be close to my mother. I came to San Antonio, Texas, and I've been here ever since. It's been a good relationship.
The interruption of your missionary service and the death of your dad is one of the stories that you tell in this new book. And part of that story is an encounter your dad had with a six-year-old child from a Sunday school called Ginger. Can you tell us just what happened there?
My father was an oil field mechanic, and the only reason I say that is to say he was a very active man who used his hands and his back to make his living. So when he was diagnosed at the age of 69 with ALS, which is a disease that, and as you know, creates atrophy in the muscles. He was diagnosed at the age of 69, and he died by the time he was 71. He lost use of his muscles within a matter of months. It was a devastating blow to our whole family, but he kept his faith in the midst of it all. He modeled the theme of the story, You'll Get Through This. and a six-year-old girl from a Sunday school class came to visit him. This six-year-old girl, two decades later, wrote me a letter telling me she still remembered the day that she asked my dad, "Are you dying?" You know, only a six-year-old can get by with that. Her mother knew my mother, and they came over to visit, and she saw my dad in a hospital bed in our living room, walked right up to him and said, "Are you dying?" And he said, "I am." She said, "Are you afraid?" He said, "No, because when I die, I get to meet God." And that had such a profound impact on her that she could still remember it many years later. And that's part of what I talk about when I say you'll get through this. With faith in God, we're able to face these trials and tragedies. Not that they're easy and not that the solution is quick, but God can get us through them and keep us on our feet.
Your book is framed by the Old Testament story of Joseph. For the uninitiated, can you briefly take us through that story and what that story in particular has to say to us today? Why have you used that one?
Okay, because I love the story of Joseph, the Old Testament Joseph. Joseph is the son of Jacob, and Jacob the grandson of Abraham. Jacob has 12 sons. 10 of those sons turn against Joseph, the youngest one, because he does tend to brag. He does tend to make a big deal out of himself. When he is 17 years of age, they sell him into slavery. He ends up working in Egypt as a slave for a prominent Egyptian official. Then he is falsely accused of sexual improprieties and thrown into prison. So just one thing after another happens to him. You know, abandoned by his family, sold into slavery, forced into be an immigrant, has to learn another language, has to work in a household, accused of sexual activity that he didn't do, then thrown into prison. I mean, if anything could happen to Joseph, it did. Yeah. He not only survived, he thrived. Every situation he was in, he was elevated to the top. He became the number one servant in the household. He was put in charge of the other prisoner. And then in the greatest turnaround in the Bible, he was promoted from a prisoner to prime minister of Egypt overnight. And the Pharaoh placed him in charge of running the agriculture system. And he guided the globe through a worldwide famine of 7 years of famine, then rescued his own family. And lived, you know, a long age and was prime minister of Egypt and was finally, ultimately reconciled with his own family.
There are so many profound insights you extract from that story. And as I read it, it's a really important corrective to lots of books today which say our lives should be just about success, abundance, prosperity. You say the pit is something we'll all know about.
Yeah, we've all been in the pit. And the reason I start with the pit is because when Joseph's brother sold him into slavery, they actually intended to kill him. They threw him in a pit, a deep, steep pit. Since they were just a little greedier than they were bloodthirsty, they sold him into slavery. Well, that's where many of your listeners are today. That's where many people I know. I've been there. We find ourselves in the pit. We just are in a problem, a situation that is so deep and so dark that we cannot get out. Sometimes we did it to ourselves. Sometimes it just happened to us, like a disease. But being in a pit is an important time in our life because it either draws us close to God or makes us turn away from God.
You say there's no easy exit and there's no quick exit. In fact, there's a 20-year gap between the moment Joseph was thrown into that pit and when he saw them again in that entirely different context.
I share with you a concern that many messages today promise a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
You know, far be it from me to tell God when to help us, but anybody who observes people who are suffering knows that many times we have to live with our suffering for a period of time. The Bible never promises that God will operate according to our timetable. What I think this story and other stories like this in the Bible teach us is that we can believe that ultimately, eventually, God will get us through this tough time. In the meantime, he will use it to advance his noble purpose and develop our character. So we will get through it. It may not be painless. It may not be quick. But God will use the mess that we're in 100%.
And you use this confronting phrase that God uses tragedy to accomplish his will. Why do you think he does that? Why can't he do it with success, abundance, prosperity?
Can I answer by saying he does? He does accomplish his will through success, abundance, and prosperity, but he also accomplishes his will through difficulty, challenge, and struggle. Here's what I think is a fair theology of suffering when it comes to the struggling we see in life. I don't think God creates evil. I really don't. I believe the Bible posits a God who is a good God who cannot do evil. But I do believe a God permits free choice. And the consequence of free choice is evil run rampant. But God can take that evil, case in point, Joseph being sold into slavery, he can take that evil and he can use it for good. This was the discovery of Joseph. The last words he speaks, recorded in the book of Genesis, he tells his brothers, "You intended evil against me, but God intended it for good." In other words, you really intended evil. Evil came at me. But God took that very evil, and he turned it into something good. He turned it into a demonstration of his power. He used me to rescue the world from famine, and he used me to rescue you, my family, from a barbaric situation in Cana where the lineage of Jesus could grow and develop in safety. So I think understanding that God doesn't create the evil, but God can use the evil, is really essential in getting through a tough time.
Yes. On Open House, we're with Max Licardo, and after a short break, Max explains his survivor's creed and how he was forced to dip into it with his own significant health issue. It marked a major turning point in his own life. Max, you've been a pastor alongside countless numbers of people in the midst of life's tough stuff for decades. There's one question you say you've learned to ask those people. Can you tell us what that is and what it says?
As I've talked to people who are going through difficult times, I've learned that at some point in the conversation, it's helpful to ask this question. What do you still have that no one can take away? Or what do you still have that you cannot lose? I understand that you've lost a lot. Maybe you've lost a loved one. Maybe you've lost a marriage. Maybe you've lost your job. You feel like you've lost everything. But think carefully now. What do you still have that you cannot lose? And I'm fishing for an answer. I'll just confess that. I'm fishing for an answer. Because I want the person who's going through a difficult time to realize they may feel like they've lost everything, but we never have. We're still God's child. We're still known by God, treasured by God. And for those who put their trust in God, we have the hope of heaven. We have the promise of eternity. We still have much to hold on to. The key, Lee, in getting through tough times, the key is battling despair. Despair is our enemy. And despair is when we say, my suffering has no end and my suffering has no purpose. The Bible speaks against those two lies. The Bible says your suffering will end, if not in this life, for sure in the life to come, and your suffering has a purpose. God is using this suffering, this difficult time, for your good and his glory. And so what I'm trying to do through this book and through my visits with people who struggle is help them to hold on to that one thing they cannot take, and that is God's destiny.
Max, for this latest book, as I said before, you've developed the Survivor's Creed. Can you briefly take us through the 7 points of that and briefly what they say?
The Survivor's Creed has just come out of many conversations that I've had with different people who are struggling. And the Survivor's Creed simply says, you're going to get through this. May not be easy, may not be quick, but God will use this mess for something good. In the meantime, don't despair, but don't do anything foolish either. God will use this mess for good. And every phrase in that Survivor's Creed is important. I don't want to overpromise. I'd love to say you're going to get through this tomorrow. Yeah. I don't know that. It may not be quick. Sometimes God takes his time. And it may not be easy. But I do believe that God trumps evil. He can take that which is the mess of life, and he can use it for good. In the meantime, we've got to be careful and avoid despair. Don't go out on the ledge. Don't assume the worst. And don't do anything foolish. Don't try to treat your problem by drinking it away or taking drugs, or don't deal with debt with more debt. Just don't be foolish. Just be patient and believe that in the right way, in the right time, God will get you through.
Can I ask this challenging question? What if I can't get through this? What if, say, my cancer diagnosis tomorrow is a terminal one?
Yeah. Here's my word to you. Yes, you will get through it in the way God desires. I know that people hear that answer and they say, oh, that's a convenient response. I understand that. But from the Christian worldview, we do get through even death. We get through even a disease because of the promise of heaven. The accomplishment of God through his Son, Jesus Christ, on the cross grants us an invitation to live a life that's free of death and free of sin and free of disease. When we are in heaven, every single person will say, hey, I got through it. God kept his promise. And so that's why I can say with confidence, God will get you through this.
Max, from the wealth of pastoring you've done over decades, is there one particular story you can relate to us of how this played out in the real life experience of someone you're alongside?
I can. There's so many from which to pick, but I think my favorite is just a dear friend in our church. His wife was diagnosed with cancer. It just seemed like his whole world was tumbling in. He had built his world around her. He loved her, and he prayed. He asked God to heal her, and God did not heal her in the time and the way he wanted. But what he did do is that he used the courage and faithfulness of the wife to bring faith into the husband, because she never got bitter. She never complained. She accepted it. And when people said, why would you get cancer? Her response would be, well, why not me? She would always say, my great reward comes after this life, not in this life. And that's what awakened faith within this husband. And at her funeral, he declared his faith. And it was a beautiful moment. It was a difficult moment, a sad moment, but at the same time, it was a beautiful moment. And I believe that God got him through that struggle by watching the faith of his wife.
And as I said before the break, in recent years, you've actually had to apply this in your own life. This is not something you just know about and write about in theory. Can you briefly take us through the events that unfolded in your life in 2007?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with a heart condition, which was surprising because I thought I was in good health, but I was diagnosed with a genetic heart condition. It was an extended period of testing and surgery and hospital stays. Let me be quick to say, by comparison, it was not difficult. I know people who've had to face much worse, but we only have one heart. And so I had to work through the anxiety of my heart not working. But the Lord in his kindness chose to bring healing in my life physically, as he had already done spiritually. But I had to come face to face with my mortality, you know, with my age, getting older just like everybody else. It was a good time for me to say, okay, God, you're in charge. I trust you. It was a faith development time for me.
But you also had to step back from some of your ministry. And you might be forgiven for thinking, well, what's going on here? There's so much good stuff to be done.
I realized that it would be possible for me to focus my attention on what I do, I feel best, and that is writing and preaching. Prior to the heart condition, I was a senior minister in the sense that I was over the building and the budgets and other things that most senior pastors do. So I just changed my focus. I feel like right now I still do as much work as I've ever done, but I realize that as the years are passing more quickly, I want to focus on what I do best. And so I've turned all of the senior minister roles over to a coworker, and he does the hard work and I get the easy work.
There's great wisdom in that, too. So when you say that in the midst of the pit, God is reweaving your pain for a higher purpose, time to get personal. What are the rough edges he's had to knock off Max Licato through his life?
Yeah, I think arrogance and self-centeredness, thinking that the world revolves around me and thinking that God owes me something, that's an ongoing struggle. Trying to please everyone is a challenge that I have, meeting everyone's expectation. The battle with alcoholism is long gone. I don't struggle with that anymore. I'm very grateful to say, and I know it could come back, but it has not. I would say those two that I mentioned, the self-centeredness and this feeling of trying to please people. If I could wave a magic wand and have those taken away, I think I'd be happy.
As a man with such a significant ministry to so many over so many years, and giving out a great deal, can I ask you this, how you've kept your own faith personally fresh, nourished, and how you've maintained a resilience through it all, through all the pressures, through all the expectations?
I have gone through hard times. I have gone through difficult times, and there have been stretches in which my faith was not really abundant. What I've found that really helps me is worship. I really enjoy worship. I get online every morning. I'll pick out a church that's recorded their worship services. And if you could see me, you'd see me in my office just singing or standing or kneeling. I really love worship. My wife has taught me much about the power of worship. It just seems to reinforce my faith. And so I find that as a practical way to get strength.
Max, your final question. You say in this book that we carry something of God within, something noble and holy, something the world needs, wisdom, kindness, mercy, skill. Max, for those who don't have that or don't feel they have it, how is it possible to feel that, to know that reality?
Thank you for asking that, because I think that's such an important question. You may not feel that you have it, but please believe me when I say you do. You are the most unique. There's no one else like you. You're God's best idea. There's something about you that the world desperately needs. And I think that's why the devil comes and brings these trials, because he wants to silence what is unique about your life. But don't let him. At least entertain this thought, even if you can't embrace it fully. At least entertain the possibility that you are absolutely unique and that God has a deep and abiding passion and love for you. And he's got a great vision for you, not just in this life, but in the life to come. Live with that possibility for just a day or two or three, and I think you'll see that it begins to change the way you look at your life, change the way you look at your struggles.
Max Licata, I'm so privileged you've spared some generous time with us. Thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House.
Oh, thank you so much, and I hope we get to do it again.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.